Okay. Will you send me yesterday's recording?
Yeah, I just was about to say I haven't even taken it off my phone yet, but I'll send it tomorrow morning.
Okay. Yeah, my apologies. I was just, you know, yesterday was filming.
Uh-huh.
Today was Ganga all morning until like 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Ganga all morning.
Well, I had these ashes.
You're right. Right.
Jamani Vas was there. Purushottam Maharaj was like half of Bhaktivedanta Manu was there. It was great. We went to the other side by boat, and actually on the other side is where the Jamuna flows.
Mm-hmm.
And that area is Dira Shamira, mm-hmm. is the place of the residents. Vikriditam Rajavatu Viridam Savishnu Sharam Vitam Shinaya Dativarnayatya Bhakti Param Bhagati Pratilabdhikama Rid Roga Kama Ashu Papagneta Achirena Dira. Well, 50 pages, I guess we can do it.
I'm ready.
Chapter 29, the Rasa Dance Introduction.
Page 254.
In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that the Rasa Dance took place on the full moon night of the Sharad season. From the statements of previous chapters, it appears that the festival of Govardhan Puja was performed just after the dark moon night of the month of Kartik, and thereafter the ceremony of Ratri Dvitiya was performed. Then the wrath of Indra was exhibited in the shape of torrents of rain and hailstones, and Lord Krishna held up Govardhan Hill for 7 days until the ninth day of the moon. Thereafter, on the 10th day, the inhabitants of Vrindavan were talking amongst themselves about the wonderful activities of Krishna. And the next day, Ekadasi was observed by Nanda Maharaj. On the next day, Dwadashi, Nanda Maharaj went to take a bath in the Ganges and was arrested by one of the men of Varuna. Then he was released by Lord Krishna. Then Nanda Maharaj, along with the coward men, was shown the spiritual sky. It's really a power-packed few weeks. In this way, the full moon night of the Sharad season came to an end. The full moon night of Ashwin is called Sharad Purnima. It appears from the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam that Krishna has to wait another year for such a moon before enjoying the rasa dance with the gopis. At the age of 7 years, he lifted up Govardhan Hill. Therefore, rasa dance took place during his 8th year. From Vedic literatures, it appears that when a theatrical actor dances amongst many dancing girls, the group dance is called a rasa dance. When Krishna saw the full moon night of the Sharad season, decorated with various seasonal flowers, especially the Mallika flower, which are very fragrant, he remembered the gopis' prayers to goddess Katyayani, wherein they prayed for Krishna to be their husband. He thought that the full moon night of the Sharad season was just suitable for a nice dance. So the desire to have Krishna as their husband would then be fulfilled. The words used in this connection in Srimad Bhagavatam Bhagavan Api. This means that although Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus has no desire that needs to be fulfilled because he is always full with 6 opulences, he still wanted to enjoy the company of the gopis in the rasa dance. Bhagavan Api signifies that this dance is not like the ordinary dancing of young boys and young girls. The specific words used in Srimad Bhagavatam are Yogamaya Mupashrita, which means that this dancing with the gopis is on the platform of Yogamaya, not Mahamaya. The dancing of young boys and girls within the material world is in the kingdom of Mahamaya, where the external energy, the rasa dance of Krishna with the gopis is on the platform of Yogamaya. The difference between the platforms of Yogamaya and Mahamaya is compared in the Chaitanya Charitamrita to the difference between gold and iron. From the viewpoints of metallurgy, gold and iron are both metals, but the quality is completely different. Similarly, although the rasa dance and Lord Krishna's association with the gopis appears like ordinary mixing of young boys and girls, the quality is completely different. The difference is appreciated by great Vaishnavas because they can understand the difference between love of Krishna and lust.
On the Mahamaya platform, dances take place on the basis of sense gratification. But when Krishna called the gopis by sounding his flute, they very hurriedly rushed toward the spot of the rasa dance with a transcendental desire to satisfy Krishna. The author of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, has explained that lust means sense gratification, and love also means sense gratification, but for Krishna. In other words, when activities are enacted on the platform of personal sense gratification, they are called material activities, but when they are acted on this, for the satisfaction of Krishna, they are spiritual activities. On any platform of activities, the principle of sense gratification is there. But on the spiritual platform, sense gratification for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, sense gratification is for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, whereas on the material platform, it is for the performer. For example, on the material platform, when a servant serves a master, he's trying to satisfy not the senses of his master, but rather his own senses. The servant would not serve the master if the payment stopped. That means that the servant engages himself in the service of the master just to satisfy his own senses. On the spiritual platform, however, the servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead serves Krishna without payment and he continues his service in all conditions. That is the difference between Krishna consciousness and material consciousness. As mentioned above, it appears that Krishna enjoyed the rasa dance with the gopis when he was 8 years old. At that time, many of the girls were married because in India, especially in those days, girls were married at a very early age. There are even many instances of girls giving birth to a child at the age of 12. Under the circumstances, all the gopis who wanted to have Krishna as their husband were already married. At the same time, they continued to hope that Krishna would be their husband. Their attitude toward Krishna was that of paramo love. Therefore, the loving affairs of Krishna with the gopis are called parakiya ras. The attitude of a married man who desires another wife or a wife who desires another husband is called parakiya ras. Actually, Krishna is the husband of everyone because he is the supreme enjoyer. The gopis wanted Krishna to be their husband, but factually, there was no possibility of his marrying all the gopis. But because they had that natural tendency to accept Krishna as their supreme husband, the relationship between the gopis and Krishna is called parakiya ras. This parakiya ras is ever existent in Goloka Vrindavan, in the spiritual sky, where there is no possibility of the inebriety which characterizes parakiya ras in the material world. In the material world, parakiya ras is abominable, whereas in the spiritual world, it is present in the super excellent relationship of Krishna and the gopis. There are many relationships with Krishna, master and servant, friend and friend, parent and son, and lover and beloved. Out of all of these rasas, the parakiya ras is considered to be the topmost. This material world is the perverted reflection of the spiritual world. It is just like the reflection of a tree on the bank of a reservoir of water. The topmost part of the tree is seen as the lowest part. Similarly, parakriya ras, when pervertedly reflected in this material world, is most abominable. Therefore, when people imitate the rasa dance of Krishna with the gopis, they simply enjoy the perverted, abominable reflection of the transcendental parakriya rasa. There is no possibility of enjoying this transcendental parakiya rasa within the material world. It is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that one should not imitate this parakiya rasa, even in dream or imagination. Those who do so drink the most deadly poison. When Krishna, the supreme enjoyer, desired to enjoy the company of the gopis in that full moon night of the Sharad season, exactly at that very moment, the moon, the lord of the stars, appeared in the sky, displaying its most beautiful features. The full moon night of the Sharad season is the most beautiful night in the year. In the Indian city of Agra in Uttar Pradesh province, there is a great monument called the Taj Mahal, which is a tomb made of first-class marble stone. During the night of the full moon of the Sharad season, many foreigners go to see the beautiful reflections of the moon on the tomb. Thus, this full moon night is celebrated even today for its beauty.
When the full moon rose in the east, it tinged everything with a reddish color. With the rising of the moon, the whole sky appeared smeared by red kumkum. When a husband, long separated from his wife, returns home, he decorates the face of his wife with red kumkum. This long-expected moonrise of the short season was thus smearing the eastern sky. The appearance of the moon increased Krishna's desire to dance with the gopis. The forest was filled with fragrant flowers. The atmosphere was cooling and festive. When Lord Krishna began to blow his flute, the gopis all over Vrindavan became enchanted. Their attraction to the vibration of the flute increased 1,000 times due to the rising full moon, the red horizon, the calm and cool atmosphere, and the blossoming flowers. All the gopis were by nature very much attracted to Krishna's beauty, and when they heard the vibration of his flute, they became apparently lustful to satisfy the senses of Krishna. Immediately upon hearing the vibration of the flute, they all left their respective engagements and proceeded to the spot where Krishna was standing. While they ran very swiftly, their earrings swung back and forth. They all rushed toward the place known as Vamshivat. Some of them were engaged in milking cows, but they left their milking business half finished and immediately went to Krishna. One of them had just collected milk and put it in a milk pan on the stove to boil, but she did not care whether the milk overboiled and spilled. She immediately left to go see Krishna. Some of them were breastfeeding their small babies, and some were engaged in distributing food to the members of their families. But they left all such engagements and immediately rushed toward the spot where Krishna was playing his flute. Some were engaged in serving their husbands, and some were themselves engaged in eating, but caring neither to serve their husbands nor eat, they immediately left. Some of them wanted to decorate their faces with cosmetic ointments and to dress themselves very nicely before going to Krishna. But unfortunately, they could not finish their cosmetic decorations or put on their clothes in the right way because of their anxiety to meet Krishna immediately. Their faces were decorated hurriedly and were haphazardly finished. Some even put the lower part of their clothes on the upper part of their bodies and the upper part on the lower part. While all the gopis were hurriedly leaving their respective places, their husbands, brothers, and fathers were all struck with wonder to know where they were going. Being young girls, they were protected either by husbands, elder brothers, or fathers. All their guardians forbade them to go to Krishna, but they disregarded them. When a person becomes attracted by Krishna and is in full Krishna consciousness, he does not care for any worldly duties, even though very urgent. Krishna consciousness is so powerful that it gives everyone relief from all material activities. Srila Rupa Goswami has written a very nice verse wherein one gopi advises another. My dear friend, if you desire to enjoy the company of material society, friendship and love, then please do not go see that smiling boy, Govinda, who was standing on the bank of the Yamuna and playing his flute, his lips brightened by the beams of the full moonlight. Srila Rupa Goswami indirectly instructs that one who has been captivated by the beautiful smiling face of Krishna has lost all attraction for material enjoyments. This is the test of advancement in Krishna consciousness. A person advancing in Krishna consciousness must lose interest in material activities and personal sense gratification. Some of the gopis were factually detained from going to Krishna by their husbands and were locked up by force within their rooms. Being unable to go to Krishna, they began to meditate upon his transcendental form by closing their eyes. They already had the form of Krishna within their minds. They proved to be the greatest yogis, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita. A person who is constantly thinking of Krishna within his heart with faith and love is considered to be the topmost of all yogis. Actually, a yogi concentrates his mind on the form of Lord Vishnu. That is real yoga. Krishna is the original form of all Vishnu tattvas. The gopis who could not go to Krishna personally began to meditate on him as perfect yogis. In the conditioned stage of the living entities, there are two kinds of results of fruit of activities. The conditioned living entity who is constantly engaged in sinful activities has suffering as his result, and he who is engaged in pious activities has material enjoyment as a result. In either case, material suffering or material enjoyment, the sufferer or enjoyer is conditioned by material nature.
The gopi associates of Krishna who assembled in the place where Krishna was appearing were from different groups. Most of the gopis were eternal companions of Krishna, as stated in the Brahma Samhita, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pravita Vita Abhis. In the spiritual world, the associates of Krishna, especially the gopis, are manifestations of the pleasure potency of Lord Krishna. They are expansions of Srimati Radharani. But when Krishna exhibits his transcendental pastimes within the material world, in some of the universes, not only the eternal associates of Krishna come, but also those who are being promoted to that status from this material world. So some of the gopis who joined Krishna's pastimes within this material world were coming from the status of ordinary human beings. If they had been bound by fruit of action, they were fully freed from the reactions of karma by constant meditation on Krishna. Their severely painful yearnings caused by their not being able to see Krishna freed them from all sinful reaction, and their ecstasy of transcendental love for Krishna in his absence ended all their reactions to material pious activities. The conditioned soul is subjected to birth and death either by pious or sinful activities, but the gopis who began to meditate on Krishna transcended both positions and became purified and thus elevated to the status of the gopis already expanded by his pleasure potency. All the gopis who concentrated their minds on Krishna in the spirit of paramour love became fully purified of all the fruit of reactions of material nature, and some of them immediately gave up their material bodies developed under the three modes of material nature. Maharaj Parikshit heard Shukadeva Goswami explain the situation of the gopis who assembled with Krishna in the Rasa dance. When he heard that some of the gopis, simply by concentrating on Krishna as their paramour, became freed from all contamination of material birth and death, he said, "The gopis did not know that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They accepted him as a beautiful boy and considered him to be their paramour. So how was it possible for them to get freed from the material condition just by thinking of Krishna as a paramour?" One should consider here that Krishna and ordinary living beings are qualitatively one. The ordinary living beings, being part and parcel of Krishna, are also Brahman, but Krishna is the supreme Parabrahma. The question is, if it is possible for a devotee to get free from the material contaminated stage simply by thinking of Krishna, then why should this not be possible for others who are also thinking of someone? If one is thinking of a husband or his wife, son, or if anyone at all is thinking of another living entity, then, since all living entities are also Brahman, why are all those who think of others not freed from the contaminated stage of material nature? This is a very intelligent question, because there are always atheists imitating Krishna. In these days of Kali Yuga, there are many rascals who think themselves to be as good as Krishna, who cheat people into believing that thinking of them is as good as thinking of Lord Krishna. Parikshit Maharaj, pretending the future dangerous condition of blind followers of demoniac imitators, therefore asked this question. Unfortunately, it is recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam to warn innocent people that thinking of an ordinary man and thinking of Krishna are not the same. Actually, even thinking of the demigods cannot compare with thinking of Krishna. It is warned in the Vaishnava Tantra that one who puts Vishnu, Narayana, and Krishna on the same level as the demigods is called a Pashandi or rascal. On hearing this question from Maharaj Parikshit, Shukadeva Goswami replied, "My dear king, your question is already answered even before this incident." Because Parikshit Maharaj wanted to clear up the situation, his spiritual master answered him very intelligently, "Why are you again asking about the same subject matter which has already been explained to you? Why are you so forgetful? A spiritual master is always in the superior position, so he has the right to chastise his disciple in this way. Shukadeva Goswami knew that Maharaj Parikshit asked the question not for his own understanding, but as a warning to the future innocent people who might think others to be equal to Krishna.
Shukadeva Goswami then reminded Parikshit Maharaj about the salvation of Shishupala. Shishupala was always envious of Krishna, and because of his envy, Krishna killed him. But since Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shishupala gained salvation simply by seeing him. If an envious person can get salvation simply by concentrating his mind on Krishna, then what to speak of the gopis who are so dear to Krishna and always think of him in love? There must be some difference between the enemies and the friends. If Krishna's enemies could get freed from material contamination and become one with the Supreme, then certainly his dear friends like the gopis can achieve such freedom and much more. Besides that, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is called Rishikesh. Shukadeva Goswami also said that Krishna is Rishikesh, the super soul. Whereas an ordinary man is a conditioned soul covered by the material body, Krishna and Krishna's body are the same, because he is Rishikesh. Any person making a distinction between Krishna and Krishna's body is full number one. Krishna is Rishikesh and Hoksuja. These two particular words have been used by Shukadeva Goswami in this instance. Rishikesh is the Supersoul, and Hoksuja is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, transcendental to the material nature. Just to show favor to the ordinary living entities, out of his causeless mercy, he appears as he is. Unfortunately, foolish persons mistake him to be an ordinary person, and so they become eligible to go to hell. Shukadeva Goswami continued to inform Maharaj Parikshit that Krishna is not an ordinary person, but rather the Supreme Personality of Godhead, imperishable, immeasurable, and without any material qualities, but full of all spiritual qualities. He appears in this material world out of his causeless mercy, and whenever he appears as he is without change. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, where the Lord says that he appears by his spiritual potency. He does not appear under the control of the material potency. The material potency is under his control. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that the material potency is working under his superintendence. It is also confirmed in the Brahma Samhita that the material potency, known as Durga, is acting just like a shadow which moves with the movement of the substance. The conclusion is that if one somehow or other becomes attached to Krishna or attracted to him, either because of his qualities of beauty, opulence, fame, strength, renunciation, or knowledge, through affection or friendship, or even through lust, anger, or fear, then one's salvation and freedom from material contamination are assured. In the Bhagavad Gita 18th chapter, the Lord states that one who is engaged in preaching Krishna consciousness is very dear to him. A preacher has to face many difficulties in his struggle to preach pure Krishna consciousness. Sometimes he has to suffer bodily injuries, and sometimes he has to meet death also. All this is taken as a great austerity on behalf of Krishna. Krishna therefore has said that such a preacher is very, very dear to him. If Krishna's enemies can expect salvation simply by concentrating their minds on him, then what to speak of persons who are so dear to him? The conclusion should be that the salvation of those who are engaged in preaching Krishna consciousness in the world is guaranteed in all circumstances. But such preachers never care for salvation, because factually one who is engaged in Krishna consciousness, devotional service, has already achieved salvation. Shukadeva Goswami therefore assured King Parikshit that he should always rest assured that one who is attracted by Krishna attains liberation from material bondage, because Krishna is the transcendental master of all mystic power. When all the gopis assembled, as described before, Krishna, he began to speak to them, welcoming them, as well as discouraging them by word jugglery. Krishna is the supreme speaker. He is the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita. He can speak on the highest elevated subjects of philosophy, politics, economics, everything. And he also spoke before the gopis who were so dear to him. He wanted to enchant them by word jugglery, and thus he began to speak as follows.
O ladies of Vrindavan, Krishna said, you are very fortunate and you are very dear to me. I am very much pleased that you have come here, and I hope everything is well in Vrindavan. Now please order me. What can I do for you? What is the purpose of your coming here in the dead of night? Kindly take your seats and let me know what I can do for you. The gopis had come to Krishna to enjoy his company, to dance with him, embrace him, and kiss him. And when Krishna began to receive them very officially, showing all kinds of etiquette, they were surprised.
I have a quick question. That's not a challenge, but it says here the gopis had come to Krishna conscious, Krishna to enjoy his company, to dance with him, embrace him, kiss him. So much emphasis was put already that the gopis don't think of their own enjoyment. So how should we understand that?
That was enjoying his company by not thinking of their own enjoyment.
In other words, they were enjoying...
Indirectly. Yes.
Indirectly enjoying.
I just always took it as implicit. They came to Krishna to enjoy his company, meaning to give Krishna pleasure.
To give Krishna pleasure, because that's their greatest enjoyment.
That's their only enjoyment.
That's their only enjoyment. You can take a look. I mean, it's obviously that's the understanding. But a critical mind would look at that.
Well, it's a summary study, and you know, also the author is attracting the minds of
that's right
conditions.
That's what I was wondering. I didn't want to say it, but I was wondering if that's what Prabhupada is. Hey, you want to enjoy?
Yes.
Isn't it, people? This is the best way to enjoy. You won't get any higher pleasure than this.
That's what I thought when I first read it as a.
Which really makes it attractive. But I didn't want to speculate. Any comments?
Just that there's a sort of a common thread. In terms of the relationship between Krishna and the gopis, that you know, different acharyas talk about, that they tell Krishna, "I want something," because if Krishna thinks that they want it, then he'll do it. If he thinks they're just doing something to please him, he's not so inclined. So his desire is to please them. So if he thinks that they came to enjoy his company and to dance with him, embrace them, and then they wanted to enjoy his company, then he'll fulfill their desire. And that's how the relationship sort of goes. The same thing with Krishna. When Krishna says that he wants something from them, actually, he's trying to please their senses, because that's love, like Prabhupada was explaining earlier. But it's just spoken in a different way.
Maybe a good example of that is the cowherd boy smelling the fruits from the Talavan flowers.
Yes, that's right.
Krishna, Krishna.
That's right, we're hungry.
Yes. Yeah. Slay the hunger in us. But they were thinking, you know, we want Krishna to eat.
That's right.
Same.
That's very clearly explained also, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Is it Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that? I can't remember where it is. That the cowboy specifically, also at the same time when they were asking for food, they were feeling hungry to get food from the wives of the Brahmins. Same mentality was there. Actually, they were thinking how to get food for Krishna, but they thought, well, why don't we ask it as if we're hungry? The Krishna will be.
Yeah.
And the young Brahmanas, as soon as they heard the name Krishna, they went into trance, get themselves out of the trance ecstasy. Krishna needs food. Krishna needs food. What's this ecstasy? Let's snap out of it.
Okay. Was I ready?
I was.
Okay.
Therefore, they began to smile among themselves. And though they very eagerly listened to Krishna talk in that way, they were surprised. Then Krishna began to instruct them. My dear friends, you must know that it is now the dead of night, and the forest is very dangerous. At this time, all the ferocious jungle animals, the tigers, bears, jackals, and wolves, are prowling in the forest. Therefore, it's very dangerous for you. You cannot select a secure place now. Everywhere you go, you'll find that all these animals are loitering to find their prey. I think, therefore, that you are taking a great risk in coming here in the dead of night. Please turn back immediately without delay. When he saw that they continued to smile, he said, I very much appreciate your bodily features. All of you have nice, very thin waists. All of the gopis there were exquisitely beautiful. They are described by the word sumajama. The standard of the beauty of a woman is said to be sumajama when the middle portion of the body is slender. Krishna wanted to impress on them that they were not old enough to take care of themselves. Actually, they required protection. It was not very wise for them to come in the dead of night to Krishna. Krishna also indicated that he was young and that they were young girls. It does not look very well for young girls and boys to remain together in the dead of night. After hearing this advice, the gopis did not seem very happy. Therefore, Krishna began to stress the point in a different way. My dear friends, I can understand that you have left your homes without the permission of your guardians. Therefore, I think your mothers, your fathers, your elder brothers, and even your sons, and what to speak of your husbands, must be very anxious to find you. As long as you are here, they must be searching in different places, and their minds must be very agitated. So don't tarry. Please go back and make them peaceful. When the gopis appeared to be a little disturbed and angry from hearing the free advice of Krishna, they diverted their attention to looking at the beauty of the forest. At that time, the whole forest was illuminated by the bright shining of the moon, and the air was blowing very silently over the blooming flowers, and the green leaves of the trees were moving in the breeze. Krishna took the opportunity of their looking at the forest to advise them. I think you have come out to see the beautiful Vrindavan forest on this night, he said. But now you must be satisfied, so return to your homes without delay. I understand that you are all very chaste women, so now that you have seen the beautiful atmosphere of Vrindavan forest, please return home and engage in the faithful service of your respective husbands. Some of you must have babies by this time, although you are very young. You must have left your small babies at home, and they must be crying. Please immediately go back home and just feed them with your breast milk. I can also understand that you have very great affection for me, and out of that transcendental affection you have come here, hearing my playing on the flute. Your feelings of love and affection for me are very appropriate, because I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All living creatures are my parts and parcels, and naturally they are affectionate to me. So this affection for me is very welcome, and I congratulate you for this. Now you can go back to your homes. Another thing I must explain to you is that for a chaste woman, service to the husband without duplicity is the best religious principle. Not only should a woman be faithful and chaste to her husband, but she should also be affectionate to the friends of her husband, obedient to the father and mother of the husband, and affectionate to the younger brothers of her husband. And most importantly, a woman must take care of her children. In this way, Krishna explained the duty of a woman. He also stressed the point of serving the husband. Even if he is not of very good character, or even if he is not very rich or fortunate, or even if he is old or invalid on account of continued diseases, whatever her husband's condition, a woman should not divorce her husband if she actually desires to be elevated to the higher planetary systems after leaving this body. Besides that, it's considered abominable in society if a woman is unfaithful and goes searching for another man. Such habits will deter a woman from being elevated to the heavenly planets, and the results of such habits are very degrading. A married woman should not search for a paramour, for this is not sanctioned by the Vedic principles of life. If you think that you are very much attached to me and you want my association, I advise you not to personally try to enjoy me. It is better for you to go home, simply talk about me and think of me, and by this process of constantly remembering me and chanting my names, you will surely be elevated to the spiritual platform. There is no need to stand near me. Please go back home.
The instruction given herein by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to the gopis was not at all sarcastic. Such instruction should be taken very seriously by all honest women. The chastity of women is specifically stressed herein by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, this principle should be followed by any serious woman who wants to be elevated to a higher status of life. Krishna is the center of all affection for all living creatures. When this affection is developed for Krishna, one surpasses and transcends all Vedic injunctions. This was possible for the gopis because they saw Krishna face to face. This is not possible for any woman in the conditioned state. Unfortunately, sometimes a rascal following the philosophy of monism or oneness very irresponsibly takes advantage of this rasa-lila to imitate the behavior of Krishna with the gopis, entice many innocent women, and mislead them in the name of spiritual realization. As a warning, Lord Krishna has here hinted that what was possible for the gopis was not possible for ordinary women. Although a woman can actually be elevated by the vast Krishna consciousness, she should not be enticed by an impostor who says refuse Krishna. She should concentrate her devotional activities in chanting about Krishna and meditating upon Krishna as is advised herein. One should not follow the men called sahajas, the so-called devotees who take everything very lightly. You know, I had an experience like that. It was, and before I moved in, I was still living downtown with my wife, and nearby there was this yoga place where I would go, and I'm just trying to think whether, I have Krishna book right now. Yeah, I've already had Krishna book, and so I read Krishna book. And they're just doing asanas and stuff like that, and typical type meditating. And one day the guy started talking about how they sometimes have retreats, and then they have the special type of dance that they do, which is called the rasa dance. And I just remembered this Prabhupada who said the alarm bells went off in my head, and I thought that was it. And it went back after that. But it was amazing that that kind of stuff was going on 50 years ago in Montreal, of all places. When Krishna spoke in such a discouraging way to the gopis, they became very sad, for they thought that their desire to enjoy the rasa dance with Krishna would be frustrated. Thus they became full of anxiety. Out of great sadness, the gopis began to breathe very heavily. Instead of looking at Krishna face to face, they bowed their heads and looked at the ground, and they began to draw various types of curved lines on the ground with their toes. They were shedding heavy tears, and the cosmetic decorations were being washed from their faces. The water from their eyes mixed with the kumkum on their breasts and fell to the ground. They could not say anything to Krishna, but simply stood there silently. By the silence, they expressed that their hearts were grievously wounded. Gopis were not ordinary women. In essence, they were on an equal level with Krishna. They were his eternal associates, as it is confirmed in the Bhagavad Sangita. They are expansions of the pleasure potency of Krishna, and as his potency, they are not different from him. Although they were depressed by the words of Krishna, they did not like to use harsh words against him. Yet they wanted to reboot Krishna with his unkind words, and therefore they began to speak in faltering voices. They did not like to use harsh words against Krishna because he was their dearmost, their heart and soul. The gopis had only Krishna within their hearts. They were completely surrendered and dedicated souls, naturally. When they heard such unkind words, they tried to reply, but in the attempt, torrents of tears fell from their eyes. Finally, they managed to speak. "Krishna," they said, "you're very cruel. You should not talk like that. We are full-fledged, surrendered souls. Please accept us and don't talk in that cruel way. Of course, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead and can do whatever you like, but it is not worthy of your position to treat us in such a cruel way. We've come to you, leaving everything behind, just to take shelter of your lotus feet. We know that you are completely independent and can do whatever you like, but we request you, don't reject us. We are your devotees. You should accept us as Lord Narayan accepts his devotees. There are many devotees of Lord Narayan who worship him for salvation and he awards them salvation. Similarly, how can you reject us when we have no other shelter than your lotus feet?"
"O dear Krishna," they continued, "you are the supreme instructor. There is no doubt about it. Your instruction is to women to be faithful to their husbands and merciful to their children, to take care of household affairs and to be obedient to the elder members of the family, are surely just according to the tenets of the Shastras. But we know that one may perfectly observe all these instructions of the Shastras by keeping oneself under the protection of your lotus feet. Our husbands, friends, family members, and children are all dear and pleasing to us only because of your presence, for you are the supersoul of all living creatures." Is that an example of how the devotees of Braj perceive the Lord, his majesty, his Aishwarya? It manifests just briefly and then, but it's not something that they're absorbed in. Why would they say he's super soul?
You mean here or in general?
Just here, in this particular.
I think they're more talking philosophy than talking their feeling.
Talking philosophy?
Yeah. It's more of a philosophical statement than actually what they actually experience and think all the time.
Yeah, obviously they don't experience and think that all the time, but it's just
I mean another way of taking it is that, you know, their husband, friends, families are pleasing, dear to them just because they have a relationship with Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're connected to Krishna. So then, just like some older gopi is attached to her son because her son is Krishna's friend. That's the basis of her attachment to him.
Mm-hmm. I was just trying to think. I'm overanalyzing. "Without your presence, one is worthless. When you leave the body immediately dies." Because this is all seems to be presenting Krishna as in his Aishwarya feature. And I'm trying to figure out why they're using Krishna's, their perception of Krishna's Aishwarya feature as an argument as to why they should reject his proposals.
He's been giving all these philosophical reasons.
So he was giving, so they're reciprocating.
Yeah, I mean, the ultimate issue is that they're here out of love, and he should just reciprocate out of love, but he's coming up with all kinds of moral arguments.
So therefore they're coming back with...
Yeah. They're smart.
"Without your presence, one is worthless. When you leave the body immediately dies, and according to the injunction of the Shastras, a dead body must immediately be thrown into a river or burned. Therefore, ultimately, you are the dearmost personality in this world. By placing our faith and love in your personality, we are assured of never being bereft of husbands, friends, sons, or daughters. If a woman accepts you as the supreme husband, then she will never be bereft of her husband, as in the bodily concept of life. If we accept you as our ultimate husband, then there is no question of being separated, divorced, or widowed. You are the eternal husband, eternal son, eternal friend, eternal and eternal master, and one who enters into a relationship with you is eternally happy. Since you are the teacher of all religious principles, your lotus feet have to be worshipped first. According to the Shastras, accordingly the Shastras state Acharya Upasana. The worship of your lotus feet is the first principle. Besides that,
as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Gopis are quoting Bhagavad Gita, it has not been spoken yet.
Well, it has been spoken in some other universe, their eternal associates.
Huh?
It has been spoken in some other universe and their eternal associates. They have to be privy to it.
Well, you know, Prabhupada, his answer to that was when they asked him, you know, they don't know.
What was it?
He says, this is a
summary study.
It's a summary study, my version, so I can write any damn thing I want.
Oh, yeah. And you use that for license. Besides that, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, you are the only enjoyer. You are the only proprietor, and you are the only friend. As such, we have come to you, leaving aside all so-called friends, society, and love. And now you have become our enjoyer. Let us be everlastingly enjoyed by you. Be our proprietor, for that is your natural claim. And be our supreme friend, for you are naturally so. Let us thus embrace you as the supreme beloved. Then the gopis told Lotus-eyed Krishna, please do not discourage our long-cherished desire to have you as our husband. Any intelligent man who cares for his own self-interest reposes all his loving spirit in you. Persons who are simply misled by the external energy, who want to be satisfied by false concepts, try to enjoy themselves apart from you. The so-called husband, friend, son, daughter, father, and mother are all simply sources of material misery. No one is made happy in this material world by having a so-called father, mother, husband, son, daughter, and friend. Although the father and mother are expected to protect children, there are many children who are suffering for want of food and shelter. There are many good physicians, but when a patient dies, no physician can revive them. There are many means of protection, but when one is doomed, none of the protective measures can help. And without your protection, the so-called sources of protection simply become sources of continued distress. We therefore appeal to you, dear Lord of all lords, please do not kill our long-cherished desires to have you as our supreme husband.
Dear Krishna, as women, we are certainly satisfied when our hearts are engaged in the activities of family affairs, but our hearts have already been stolen by you. We can no longer engage them in family affairs. Besides that, although you have repeatedly asked us to return home, and that is a very appropriate instruction, unfortunately, we have been stunned here. Our legs have no power to move a step from your lotus feet. Therefore, if even at your request we return home, what shall we do there? We have lost all our ability to act without you. Instead of engaging our hearts in family affairs as women, we have now developed a different type of love, which is continually blazing in our hearts. Now we request you, dear Krishna, to extinguish that fire with your beautiful smile and the transcendental vibration emanating from your lips. If you do not agree to do us this favor, we shall certainly be burnt in the fire of separation. In that condition, we shall simply think of you and your beautiful features and give up our bodies immediately. In that way, we think it will be possible for us to reside at your lotus feet in the next life. Dear Krishna, if you say that if we go home, our respective husbands will satisfy the lusty flame of our desire, we can only say that that is no longer possible. You have given us a chance to be enjoyed by you in the forest, and have touched our breasts once in the past, which we accepted as a blessing, as do the goddesses of fortune, who are enjoyed in the Vaikuntha lokas by you.
What are they referring to? And have touched them.
I was just going to ask the same question. Exactly the same question I was going to ask you. What is the reference?
I only speculated that during the Varna Hastra Leela, the glance, maybe they're considering seeing the glance as a touch.
During which leela?
For the young gopis, for the Praja Kumaris.
It's the only thing I could think of. Varna Hastra taking the clothes. Krishna looked and saw. I always just thought that maybe they're taking that. Mm-hmm. Or else it's a leela that we don't know about.
Yeah.
Is it in the Bhagavata?
What is the statement in the Bhagavata? The leela isn't.
Yeah, I was asking about the statement.
Okay, let's just go on.
Since we have tasted this transcendental enjoyment, we are no longer interested in going to anyone but you for the satisfaction of our lust. Dear Krishna, the lotus feet of the goddess of fortune are always worshipped by the demigods. Although she is always resting on your chest in the Vaikuntha planets, she underwent great austerity and penance to have some shelter at your lotus feet, which are always covered by tulasi leaves. Your lotus feet are the proper shelter of your servitors and the goddess of fortune. Instead of abiding on your chest, comes down and worships your lotus feet. We have now placed ourselves under the dust of your feet. Please do not reject us, for we are fully surrendered souls. Dear Krishna, you are known as Hari. You destroy all the miseries of all living entities, specifically of those who have left their homes and family attachment and have completely taken to you. We have left our homes with the hope that we shall completely devote and dedicate our lives to your service. We are simply begging to be engaged as your servants. We do not wish to ask you to accept us as your wives. Simply accept us as your maidservants. Since you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead and like to enjoy the Palakiya Rasa and are famous as a transcendental woman hunter, we have come to satisfy your transcendental desires. We are also after our own satisfaction, for simply by looking at your smiling face, we have become very lusty. We have come before you decorated with all ornaments and dress, but until you embrace us, all our garments and beautiful features remain incomplete. You are the Supreme Person, and if you complete our dressing attempt as the Purusha Bhushana, or the male ornament, then all our desires and bodily decorations are complete.
Not here.
I think so.
He says, O lotus eyed one, the goddess of fortune considers a festive occasion whenever she touches the soles of your lotus feet. You are very dear to the residents of the forest, and therefore we will also touch those lotus feet. From that time on, we will be unable even to stand in the presence of any other man who will have fully satisfied by you. I looked all around here. There's no mention of that. That must be the Srila Prabhupada, either from some other commentator.
Is it possible that Prabhupada is just using this? I mean, he's making it accessible according to the audience by using the Bhagavad Gita philosophy in this discourse between the gopis and Krishna to somehow.
Are you talking about this touch previously?
Huh? Because it's not, it's certainly not exactly the words that are spoken by the gopis. Prabhupada is actually expanding on it. And he's bringing in a lot of philosophical points.
Yeah. Well, it's 1973.
73?
Krishna book?
I don't know. I purchased Krishna book in 73.
Oh, no, sorry, 71.
Yeah, I purchased it in 73.
71. And, you
know, and the 72, I think.
The Bhagavatam.
70.
Yeah, I got it in 72.
I got it in 70, yeah, the 72.
So, Bhagavatam isn't even there. In fact, Bhagavad Gita is only in the abridged version.
That's what I'm thinking.
And yet Prabhupada wants to give us Krishna Leela, but now there's all this stuff without any qualification. So that's why, when Mara said, oh, it's only 50 pages, well, he's like, it's like non-stop paragraphs, the whole thing, the paragraph is so dense. And it's, Prabhupada's really qualifying his readers.
You really get a sense of that.
Yeah, or at least they really got to wade through a lot of stuff to get to this nectar.
This is nice.
Yeah. Where are we? Where are Marsh still reading?
Yeah.
Dear Krishna, we have simply been captivated by seeing you with tilak and with earrings, and by seeing your beautiful face covered with scattered hair and bearing your extraordinary smile. Not only that, we are also attracted by your arms, which always give assurance to the surrendered souls. And although we are also attracted by your chest, which is always embraced by the goddess of fortune, we do not wish to take her position. We shall simply be satisfied by being your maidservants. If you accuse us, however, of encouraging prostitution, then we can only ask, where is that woman within these three worlds who is not captivated by your beauty and the rhythmic songs vibrated by your transcendental flute? Within these three worlds, there is no distinction between men and women in relation to you, because both men and women belong to the marginal potency of Prakriti. No one is actually the enjoyer or the male. Everyone is meant to be enjoyed by you. There is no woman within these three worlds who cannot but deviate from her path of chastity once she is attracted to you, because your beauty is so sublime that not only men and women, but also cows, birds, beasts, and even trees, fruits, and flowers, everyone and everything becomes enchanted, and what to speak of ourselves. It is, however, definitely decided that as Lord Vishnu is always protecting the demigods from the onslaught of demons, so you have also advented in Vrindavan, just to give the residents protection from all kinds of distress. O dear friend of the distress, kindly place your hand on our burning breasts as well as on our heads, because we have surrendered unto you as your eternal maidservants. If you think, however, that your lotus-like palms might be burned to ashes if placed on our burning breasts, let us assure you that your palms will feel pleasure instead of pain, as the lotus flower, although very delicate and soft, enjoys the scorching heat of the sun. Upon hearing the anxious plea of the gopis, the Supreme Personality of Godhead smiled, and being very kind to the gopis, the Lord, although self-sufficient, began to embrace them and kiss them as they desired. When Krishna, smiling, looked at the faces of the gopis, the beauty of their faces became 100 times enhanced. When he was enjoying them in their midst, he appeared just like the full moon surrounded by millions of shining stars. Thus the Supreme Personality of Godhead, surrounded by hundreds of gopis and decorated with a flower garland of many colors, began to wander within the Vrindavan forest, sometimes singing to himself and sometimes singing with the gopis. In this way, the Lord and the gopis reached the cool, sandy bank of the Yamuna, where there were lilies and lotus flowers. In such a transcendental atmosphere, the gopis and Krishna began to enjoy one another. While they were walking on the bank of the Yamuna, Krishna would sometimes put his arms around a gopi's head, breast, or waist. Pinching one another and joking and looking at one another, they enjoyed. When Krishna touched the bodies of the gopis, their lust to embrace him increased. They all enjoyed these pastimes. Thus the gopis were blessed with all mercy by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for they enjoyed his company without a tinge of mundane sex life. The gopis, however, soon began to feel very proud, thinking themselves to be the most fortunate women in the universe due to being favored by the company of Krishna. Lord Krishna, who was known as Keshava, could immediately understand their pride caused by their great fortune of enjoying him personally. And in order to show them his causeless mercy and to curb their false pride, he immediately disappeared from the scene, exhibiting his opulence of renunciation. The Supreme Personality of God is always full of six kinds of opulences, and this is an instance of the opulence of renunciation. This renunciation confirms Krishna's total non-attachment. He is always self-sufficient and is not dependent on anything. This is the platform on which his transcendental pastimes are enacted. Thus ends the Bhaktivinoda Purport of the 29th chapter of Krishna, the Rasa Dance Introduction.
I was just thinking, I can't help but share this. You can see how this is just such a totally, as the point Prabhupada makes, totally perverted reflection of the material world. I mean, material world is such a perverted reflection of imagine, you know, somebody reading this and saying Krishna's using his position as God to exploit, you know, to exploit the innocent gopis, right?
Considering things that are sort of in the air and used
nowadays.
Yeah,
exactly. That's the point I'm making.
8-year-old girls, other people's wives, leave your husbands and kids.
It's phenomenal. It's amazing.
Not even a matter of polygamy. It's a matter of just, you know, makes Harvey Weinstein look like a small tiger.
Yeah. Of course, Krishna's also 8 years old.
You can just imagine what Christians think when they come. You count on this?
Christian thinks what?
Christians.
Oh, Christians think.
Yeah. Well, a couple of incidents I had. One was university in Bristol. University students who were studying Gita and Krishna. They really locked into this and they wouldn't let me go. So it became like a real discussion.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just like something like just answer and just go on.
Did they leave satisfied?
Huh?
Did they leave satisfied?
Well, I can't remember. It was too long ago.
I got jumped at a program once, an Indian program, and I didn't know it, but one of the relatives of the person who staged the program was a Catholic. You know, when Indians become Christians, they can become quite blasphemous. But so I didn't know that such a person was at the program, so there I was giving a lecture, and all of a sudden he interrupts me in front of about 50 people. You don't know Krishna. I know Krishna. He cheated in the battle of Kurukshetra. He danced with other wives. He did this to the gopis. He did that to the gopis. You don't know. I know. He's a blasphemy in public. So I couldn't leave. So I had to fight him off. So I did my refutation based on these. I explained Krishna's no ordinary person. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I said to him, "Where's your wife?" He's like, you're dancing with someone else's wife. That's Krishna's wife. That's set them off.
Yeah. I was just at the manor. I was cultivating this man. I had a very good relation with him. We were very wealthy. And he used to go over there like almost every week and used to bring friends. He brought this one guy who's also tuned in to Krishna, but his philosophy was that Krishna was actually coming from a higher planet, and he just enjoyed with the more primitive cowherd girls over here. It's out there, definitely.
Like some alien?
Definitely. The
human race?
They don't believe there's God or anything. But that's, some other higher form of life who came here and
took them into a spaceship.
Krishna's hiding from the gopis. Chapter 30. Took us an hour to get here. When Krishna suddenly disappeared from the company of the gopis, they searched for him everywhere. After not finding him anywhere, they became afraid and almost mad after him. They were simply thinking of the pastimes of Krishna and great love and affection. Being absorbed in thought of him, they experienced loss of memory, and with dampened eyes, they began to see the very pastimes of Krishna, his beautiful talks with them, his embracing, kissing, and other activities. Being so attracted to Krishna, they imitated his dancing, his walking, and his smiling, as if they themselves were Krishna. Due to Krishna's absence, they all became crazy. Each one of them told the others that she was Krishna himself. Soon, they all assembled together and chanted Krishna's name very loudly as they moved from one part of the forest to the other, searching for him. Actually, Krishna's all pervasive. He's in the sky, he's in the forest, he's within the heart, and he's always everywhere. The gopis therefore began to question the trees and plants about Krishna. There were various types of big trees and small plants in the forest, and the gopis addressed them. Dear banyan tree, have you seen the son of Mahajananda passing this way, laughing and playing on his flute? He's stolen our hearts and gone away. If you've seen him, kindly inform us which way he has gone. Dear Ashok tree, dear Naga flower tree, and Champak flower tree, have you seen the younger brother of Balaram pass this way? He's disappeared because of our pride. The gopis were aware of the reason for Krishna's sudden disappearance. They could understand that when they had been enjoying Krishna, they thought themselves to be the most fortunate woman within the universe. And since they were feeling proud, Krishna had disappeared immediately, just to curb their pride. Krishna does not like his devotees to be proud of their service to him. He accepts everyone's service, but he does not like one devotee to proudly consider himself better than others. But sometimes there are such feelings. Krishna ends them by changing his attitude towards the devotee. The gopis then address the tulsi plants. Dear Tulsi, you are much beloved by Krishna because your leaves are always at his lotus feet. Dear Malati flower, dear Malika flower, dear Jasmine flower, all of you must have been touched by Krishna while he was passing this way after giving us transcendental enjoyment. Have you seen Madhava passing this way? O mango trees, O trees of jackfruit, O pear trees and asana trees, O blackberries and bale trees, and trees of the Kadamba flower, you're all very pious trees to be living on the bank of the Jamuna. Krishna must have passed through this way. Will you kindly let us know which way he has gone? The gopis then looked upon the ground they were traversing and began to address the earth, the earthly planet. We do not know how many penances and austerities you've undergone to be now living with the footprints of Lord Krishna upon you. You're very jolly. The hairs on your body are those jubilant trees and plants. Lord Krishna must have been very much pleased with you. Otherwise, how could he have embraced you in the form of Varaha the boar? When you were submerged in water, he delivered you, taking the whole weight of your existence on his tusks. After addressing the innumerable trees and plants on the earth, they turned their faces toward the beautiful deer who were looking at them very pleasingly. It appears, they addressed the deer, that Krishna, who is the Supreme Narayan himself, must have passed through this way along with his companion, Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. Otherwise, how is it possible that the aroma of his garland, which is smeared with the red kumkum from the breasts of the goddesses of fortune, can be perceived in the breeze blowing here? It appears that they must have passed through here and touched your bodies, and thus you are feeling so pleasant and are looking towards us with sympathy. Will you kindly therefore inform us which way Krishna has gone? Krishna is the well-wisher of Vrindavan. He is kind to you as to us. Therefore, after leaving us, he must have been present in your company. The fortunate trees, we are thinking of Krishna, the younger brother of Balaram. While passing through here, with one hand resting on the shoulder of the goddess of fortune, and the other hand twirling the lotus flower, he must have been very much pleased to accept your obeisances, and he must have glanced at you with great pleasure. Some of the gopis then addressed their gopi friends, dear friends, why don't you question these creepers who are so jubilantly embracing the big trees as if the trees were their husbands? It appears that the flowers and the creepers must have been touched by the nails of Krishna, otherwise how could they feel so jubilant?
After searching for Krishna here and there, the gopis became fatigued, and then they began to talk like mad women. They could satisfy themselves only by imitating the different pastimes of Krishna. One of them imitated the demon Putana, and one of them imitated Krishna and sucked her breast. One gopi imitated a hand-driven cart, and another gopi lay down beneath the cart, threw up her legs, touching the wheels of the cart, as Krishna did to kill the demon Sakatasura. One gopi imitated child Krishna and lay down on the ground, and one gopi became the demon Trinavarta and carried the small child Krishna by force into the sky. One of the gopis began to imitate Krishna while he was attempting to walk, breaking his ankle bills. Two gopis imitated Krishna and Balaram, and many others imitated their cowherd boyfriends. One gopi assumed the form of Bakasura, and another forced her to fall down, as the demon Bakasura did when he was killed. Similarly, another gopi defeated Vatsasura. Just as Krishna used to call his cows by their different names, so the gopis imitated him, calling the cows by their respective names. One of the gopis began to play on a flute. Another praised her the way Krishna's boyfriends praised him while he played on his flute. One of the gopis took another gopi on her shoulders, just as Krishna used to take his boyfriends. Absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, the gopi who was carrying her friend began to boast that she was Krishna herself. All of you just see my movement. One of the gopis raised her hand with her covering garments and said, "Now don't be afraid of the torrents of rain and severe hurricanes. I'll save you." In this way, she imitated the lifting of Govardhan Hill. One gopi forcibly put her feet on the head of another gopi and said, "You rascal Kaliya, I shall punish you severely. You must leave this place. I have descended to this earth to punish all kinds of miscreants." Another gopi told her friends, "Just see the flames of the forest fire coming to devour us. Please close your eyes and I shall immediately save you from this imminent danger." In this way, all the gopis were madly feeling the absence of Krishna. They inquired about him from the trees and plants. In some places, they found the imprints of the marks of the soles of his feet, namely the flag, the lotus flower, the trident, the thunderbolt, etc. After seeing those footprints, they exclaimed, "Oh, here is the impression of the marks on the soles of Krishna's feet." All the marks, such as the flag, the lotus flower, the trident, and the thunderbolt, are distinctly visible here. They began to follow the footprints, and shortly they saw another set of footprints beside them, and immediately they became very sorry. "Dear friends, just see, whose are those? Are these other footprints?" They are beside the footprints of the son of Maharaj Nanda. It is certainly Krishna passing through, resting his hand on some other gopi, exactly as an elephant goes side by side with his beloved mate. We must therefore understand that this particular gopi served Krishna with greater affectionate love than ourselves. Because of this, although he has left us, he cannot leave her company. He has taken her along with him. Dear friends, just imagine how the dust of this place is transcendentally glorious. The dust of the lotus feet of Krishna is worshipped even by Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva and the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. But at the same time, we are very sorry that this particular gopi has gone along with Krishna, for she is enjoying the nectar of Krishna's kisses and leaving us aside to lament. Oh, friends, just see. At this particular spot, we do not see the footprints of that gopi. It appears that because there were some pinpricks from the dry grass Krishna took Radha riding on his shoulder. Oh, she is so dear to him. Krishna must have picked some flowers in this spot to satisfy Radharani. Because here, when he stood erect to get the flowers from the high branches of the tree, we find only half the impression of his feet. Dear friends, just see how Krishna must have sat down here with Radharani and tried to set flowers in her hair. You can be certain that both of them sat together here. Krishna is self-sufficient. He has nothing to enjoy from any other source. Yet just to satisfy his devotee, he treated Radharani exactly as a lusty boy treats his girlfriend. Krishna is so kind that he always tolerates the disturbances created by his girlfriends.
You know, there's one objection that comes up, is that, you know, this one person is just being sort of fawned over by so many women. But up to the time of the Rasa dance, there's no mention of Krishna expanding himself. So there's no mention of... So what's the dynamic?
Didn't he expand himself in the water?
That comes after. But up to now, right now, before, when he was walking with them, you know, pinching, touching, kissing, and so on, there's no mention of him expanding himself. So how's it happening? Is it one person, and, you know, he's just going to this one, and that one, and this one?
There's a lot of them. He's got a really big crowd. That one.
I mean, there's a lot of achintya going on here, but... Just you know, they're all right. You know, they all come and they're all standing in groups, and he's standing there, and that's understandable when they're having a conversation that there's one of him. But then when they start mixing and talking,
well, how many of them are there before the Rasa dance? We know how many were there during the Rasa dance, but before the Rasa dance,
everyone.
Everyone was there.
Yeah. Yeah, people didn't just walk in and show up at the time of the residence.
Different groups, right, left to hear the flute at different times, but you're saying when they get to this point where he's walking around pinching and kissing and they're all there, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. That's all part of the residence, actually, all of these different activities. The dancing is just actually one part of the residence. All of these things, like playing in the water and walking in the forest and so on, but that's also preparation. So there's no people just like sort of showed up
there. It comes up late. Comes late.
Yeah.
Late comers will be.
So that's an interesting thing as to how the dynamic was going on. When it's Rasa dance, and it's clear one way or another, he's beside every gopi, but it's not said that here. That he was, there's no mention, at least I don't remember any mention of his being with each gopi. It just talks about them in the plural.
What part of the Rasa dance is it mentioned? Was it Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that Krishna was moving so fast in between, and that's why he didn't expand?
Well, that was his version of that it's not actually expansion, it's just a terminology.
The reason why I ask is that it could be that Krishna's doing the same thing now.
Could be, but no, it's not being said. It's not being expressed in any way that he's with each one individually. So it's their plural, he's singular. Okay.
What about like during lunch with the cowherd boys in the forest where each cowherd boy thought Krishna's looking at me?
But it's said, so we got an explanation. Yeah, there's some expansion of mystic power taking place. Something's going on, but it doesn't seem to be explicitly said. It may be there in commentaries. You'd have to go back.
In this way, all the gopis pointed out the faults of the particular gopi who had been taken alone by Krishna. They said that this chief gopi, Radharani, must be very proud of her position, thinking herself the greatest of the gopis. Yet how could Krishna take her away alone, leaving all of us aside, unless she is extraordinarily qualified and beautiful? She must have taken Krishna into the deep forest and told him, "My dear Krishna, I am now very tired. I cannot go any further. Please carry me wherever you like." When Krishna was spoken to in this way, he might have told Radharani, "All right, better get on my shoulder." But immediately Krishna must have disappeared, and now Radharani must be lamenting for him. "My dear lover, my dearest, you are so fine and so powerful. Where have you gone? I'm nothing but your most obedient maidservant. I'm very much aggrieved. Please come and be with me again." Krishna, however, is not coming to her. He must be watching her from a distant place and enjoying her sorrow. All the gopis then went further and further into the forest, searching out Krishna. But when they learned that actually Radharani was left alone by Krishna, they became very sorry. This is the test of Krishna consciousness. In the beginning, they were a little envious that Krishna had taken Radharani alone, leaving aside all the other gopis. But as soon as they knew that Krishna had also left Radharani, and she was alone lamenting for him, they became more sympathetic to her. The gopis found Radharani and heard everything from her about how she had misbehaved with Krishna and how she was proud and was insulted for her pride. After hearing all this, they became actually very sympathetic. Then all the gopis, including Radharani, proceeded further into the forest until they could no longer see the moonlight. When they saw that it was getting gradually darker, they stopped. Their mind and intelligence became absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, and they all imitated the activities of Krishna and his speeches. Due to their heart and soul being completely given to Krishna, they began to chant his glories, completely forgetting their family interests. In this way, all the gopis returned to the bank of the Yamuna and assembled there, and expecting that Krishna must return to them, they simply engaged in chanting the glories of Sri Krishna. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 30th chapter of Krishna, Krishna's hiding from the gopis.
Songs by the gopis. One gopi said, "My dear Krishna, ever since you took your birth in this land of Brajabhumi, everything appears to be glorious. The land of Vrindavan has become glorious, and as if the goddess of fortune is personally always existing here. But it is only we who are very unhappy, because we are searching for you but cannot see you with our greatest effort. Our life is completely dependent upon you. Therefore we request that you again come to us." Another gopi said, "My dear Krishna, you are the life and soul even of the lotus flower that grows on the water of lakes made transparent by the clear rains of autumn. Although the lotus flowers are so beautiful, without your glance they fade away. Similarly, without you, we are also dying. Actually, we are not your wives, but are your slaves. You have never spent any money for us, yet we are simply attracted by your glance. Now, if we die without receiving your glance, you'll be responsible for our deaths. Certainly the killing of women is a great sin, and if you do not come to see us and we die, you will suffer the reactions of sin. So please come see us. Do not think that one can be killed only by certain weapons. We are being killed by your absence. You should consider how you are responsible for killing women. We are always grateful to you because you have protected us many times from the poisonous water of the Yamuna, from the serpent Kaliya, from Bakasura, from the anger of Indra and his torrents of rain, from the forest fire and so many other incidents. You are the greatest and most powerful of all. It is wonderful for you to protect us from so many dangers, but we are surprised that you are neglecting us at this moment. Dear Krishna, dear friend, we know very well that you are not actually the son of Mother Yashoda or the coward Nanda Maharaj. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Supersoul of all living entities. You have, out of your own causeless mercy, appeared in this world. requested by Lord Brahma for the protection of the world. It is by your kindness only that you have appeared in the dynasty of Yadu. O best in the dynasty of Yadu, if anyone afraid of this materialistic way of life takes shelter at your lotus feet, you never deny him protection. Your movements are sweet and you are independent, touching the goddess of fortune with one hand and in the other bearing a lotus flower. That is your extraordinary feature. Please, therefore, come before us and bless us with the lotus flower in your hand.
Dear Krishna, you are the killer of all the fears of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. You're the supremely powerful hero, and we know that you can kill the unnecessary pride of your devotee, as well as the pride of women like us, simply by a beautiful smile. We are simply your maidservants and slaves. Please, therefore, accept us by showing us your beautiful lotus face. Dear Krishna, actually, we become very lusty, having been touched by your lotus feet. Your lotus feet certainly kill all kinds of sinful activities of devotees who have taken shelter there. You are so kind that even the ordinary animals take shelter under your lotus feet. Your lotus feet are also the residence of the goddess of fortune. That you danced on the head of the Kaliya serpent with them. Now we are requesting you to kindly place your lotus feet on your breasts and pacify our lusty desires to touch you. When I was doing Venu Gita, and I really studied very closely what Prabhupada was writing and correlating his elaboration on each verse and commentaries, and Prabhupada, just like back to that other thing that, you know, you'd already touched our breast once, Prabhupada would incorporate a lot of things from the commentaries into that wasn't actually in the verse. He would just incorporate it in his dialogue, in his version.
In Krishna.
In Krishna book, yeah. O Lord, your attractive eyes, like the lotus, are so nice and pleasing. Your sweet words are so fascinating that they please even the greatest scholars, who also become attracted to you. We are also attracted by your speaking and by the beauty of your face and eyes. Please, therefore, satisfy us by your nectarian precipices. Dear Lord, words spoken by you or words describing your activities are full of nectar, and simply by speaking or hearing your words, one can be saved from the blazing fire of material existence. Great demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are always engaged in chanting the glories of your words. They do so to eradicate the sinful activities of all living entities in the material world. If one simply tries to hear your transcendental words, he can very quickly be elevated to the platform of pious activities. For the Vaishnavas, your words give transcendental pleasure, and saintly persons who are engaged in distributing your transcendental message all over the world are first-class charitable persons. This was confirmed by Rupa Goswami when he addressed Lord Chaitanya as the most munificent incarnation, because he distributed the words of Krishna and love of Krishna free of charge all over the world. Dear Krishna, the gopis continued, you are very cunning. You can imagine how much we are distressed simply by remembering your cunning smile, your pleasing glance, your walking with us in the forest of Vrindavan, and your auspicious meditations, your talks with us in lonely places were heartwarming. Now we are all aggrieved to remember your behavior. Please save us. Dear Krishna, certainly you know how we are afflicted simply to think that your soft lotus feet are being picked by the dry grass and tiny stones in the forest. We're so attached to you that we always think simply of your lotus feet. O Krishna, when you return from the pasturing grounds with the animals, you see your face covered by your curly hair and dusted by the hoof dust of the cows. We see your mildly smiling face, and our desire to enjoy you increases. O dear Krishna, you are the supreme lover, and you always give shelter to surrendered souls. You fulfill everyone's desire. Your lotus feet are worshipped even by Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe. On whoever worships your lotus feet, you, without a doubt, always bestow your benedictions. So kindly be pleased with us and keep your lotus feet on our breasts and thus relieve our present distresses. Dear Krishna, we are seeking your kisses, which you offer even to your flute. The vibration of your flute enchants the whole world and our hearts also. Kindly, therefore, return and kiss us with your mouth of nectar. Thus ends Bhakti Vedanta purport of 31st chapter of Krishna Songs by the Gopis.
Krishna returns to the Gopis. When Lord Krishna finally reappeared among the assembled gopis, he looked very beautiful, just befitting a person with all kinds of opulences. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibhavitabhi. Krishna alone is not particularly beautiful, but when his energy, especially his pleasure energy, represented by Radharani, expands, he looks very magnificent.
That's false statement. I was talking, Krishna alone is not particularly beautiful.
That's a what statement?
That's a Bharat statement.
Hmm. I always thought it revealed something about the one who made the statement.
Something about when he made the statement?
Someone to reveal something about the person who made the statement.
Anyway, let's go on.
The Mayavadi conception of perfection and absolute truth without potency is due to insufficient knowledge. Actually, outside the exhibition of his different potencies, the absolute truth is not complete. Ananda Chinmaya Rasa means that his body is a transcendental form of eternal bliss and knowledge. Krishna is always surrounded by different potencies and therefore he is perfect and beautiful. We understand from the Brahma Samhita and Skanda Purana that Krishna is always surrounded by many thousands of goddesses of fortune. The gopis are all goddesses of fortune and Krishna took them hand in hand on the bank of the Yamuna. You can easily understand how Krishna's beauty is enhanced by the presence of his devotees.
But that's one thing.
But there's no such occurrence when Krishna's not surrounded by his devotees. So I guess that when Krishna's not with his devotees, he's not very particularly protected. That would be a way of saying when Krishna is, if such a hypothetical situation ever existed, if Krishna is not with his devotees, he's not particularly very attractive.
Really? Really? If I just look at him without anyone else, it still looks pretty attractive to me.
I just took it as a value statement made by Prabhupada, based on who he is.
Meaning?
The use of Krishna without Radharani.
Are you implying something about the Svarup?
I always took it that way, sorry.
That's a very good explanation.
We understand from the Brahma Samhita and Skanda Purana that Krishna is always surrounded by many thousands of goddesses of fortune. Gopis are all goddesses of fortune, and Krishna took them hand in hand on the bank of the Yamuna. It is said in the Skanda Purana that out of many thousands of gopis, 16,000 are prominent. Out of those 16,000 gopis, 108 are especially prominent. Out of these 108 gopis, 8 are still more prominent. And out of these 8 gopis, Radharani and Chandravali are even more prominent. And out of these 2 gopis, Radharani is the most prominent. When Krishna entered the forest on the bank of the river Yamuna, the moonlight dissipated the surrounding darkness. Due to the season, flowers like the Kunda and Kadamba were blooming, and a gentle breeze was carrying their aroma. Due to the aroma, the bees were also flying in the breeze, thinking that the aroma was honey. The gopis made a seat for Krishna by leveling the soft sand and placing cloths over it. The gopis who had gathered there had almost all been followers of the Vedas. In their previous births, during Lord Ramachandra's advent, they had been Vedic scholars who desired the association of Lord Ramachandra in conjugal love. Ramachandra had given them the benediction that they would be present for the advent of Lord Krishna, and he would fulfill their desires. During Krishna's advent, the Vedic scholars took birth in the shape of the gopis in Vrindavan. As young gopis, they got the association of Krishna in fulfillment of their previous birth's desire. The ultimate goal of their perfect desire was attained, and they were so joyous that they had nothing further to desire. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. If one attains the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then he has no desire for anything. When the gopis had Krishna in their company, not only all their grief, but their lamenting in the absence of Krishna was relieved. They felt they had no desire to be fulfilled. Fully satisfied in the company of Krishna, they spread their cloths on the ground. These garments were made of fine linen and smeared with the red kutkum which decorated their breasts. With great care, they spread a sitting place for Krishna. Krishna was their life and soul, and they created a very comfortable seat for him. Sitting on the seat amongst the gopis, Krishna became more beautiful. Great yogis like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and even Lord Shesha, and others always try to fix their attention upon Krishna in their hearts. But here the gopis actually saw Krishna seated before them on their cloths. In the society of the gopis, Krishna looked very beautiful. They were the most beautiful damsels within the three worlds, and they assembled together around Krishna.
Krishna seated himself beside each of the many gopis, and it may be asked here and how he did this. There's a significant word in this verse, Ishwar. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Ishwar Sarvabhutanam. Ishwar refers to the Supreme Lord as the Super Soul seated in everyone's heart. Krishna also manifested this potency of expansion as Paramatma in this gathering with the gopis. Krishna was sitting beside the side of each gopi, unseen by the others. Krishna was so kind to the gopis that instead of sitting in their hearts to be appreciated in yogic meditation, he seated himself by their sides. By seating himself outside, he shows special favor to the gopis, who were the selected beauties of all creation. Having gotten their most beloved Lord, the gopis began to please him by moving their eyebrows and smiling, and also by suppressing their anger. Some of them took his lotus feet in their laps and massaged them.
This is when Krishna first expanded himself.
This must have been, is that what you said?
Well, it says there, he appeared beside each other's side.
Yeah.
By the, sitting by the side of the gopis.
And while smiling, they confidently expressed their suppressed anger and said, "Dear Krishna, we are ordinary women of Vrindavan, and we do not know much about Vedic knowledge, what is right and what is wrong. We therefore put a question to you, and since you are very learned, you can answer it properly. In dealings between lovers, we find there are three classes of men. One class simply receives, another class reciprocates favorably, even if the lover is very contrary. And the third class neither acts contrary nor answers favorably in dealings of love. So out of these three classes, which do you prefer, or which do you call honest?" In answer, Krishna said, "My dear friends, persons who simply reciprocate the loving dealings of the other party are just like merchants. They give in loving affairs as much as they get from the other party. Practically, there's no question of love. It is simply self-interested or self-centered business dealing. Even those without a tinge of loving affairs are better than these merchants. Better than the first class is the second class of men who love in spite of the opposite party's contrariness. Such sincere love can be seen when the father and mother love their children in spite of their children's neglect. The third class neither reciprocate nor neglect. They can be further divided into two classes. One comprises the self-satisfied, who do not require anyone's love. They are called Atmarama, Atmarama, which means they are absorbed in the thought of the Supreme Personality Godhead and so do not care whether one loves them or not. But another class comprises ungrateful men. They are called callous. The men in this group revolt against superior persons. For instance, a son, in spite of receiving all kinds of things from loving parents, may be callous and not reciprocate. Those in this class are generally known as Guru Druha, which means that they receive favors from the parents or the spiritual master and yet neglect them. Krishna indirectly answered the questions of the gopis, even those questions which implied that Krishna did not properly reciprocate their dealings. In answer, Krishna said that he, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is self-satisfied. He does not require anyone's love, but at the same time he said that he is not ungrateful. My dear friends, Krishna continued, you might be aggrieved by my words and acts, but you must know that sometimes I do not reciprocate my devotees' dealings with me. My devotees are very much attached to me, but sometimes I do not reciprocate their feelings properly in order to increase their love for me more and more. If I can be very easily approached by them, they might think, Krishna is so easily available. So sometimes I do not respond. If a person has no money, but after some time accumulates some wealth and then loses it, he will think of the lost property 24 hours a day. Similarly, in order to increase the love of my devotees, sometimes I appear to be lost to them, and instead of forgetting me, they feel their loving sentiments for me increase. My dear friends, do not think for a moment that I have been dealing with you as I do with ordinary devotees. I know what you are. You have forsaken all kinds of social and religious obligations. You have given up all connection with your parents. Without caring for social convention and religious obligations, you have come to me and loved me, and I am so much obliged to you that I cannot treat you as ordinary devotees. Do not think that I was away from you. I was near to you. I was simply seeing how much you were anxious for me in my absence. So please do not try to find fault with me. Because you consider me so dear to you, kindly excuse me if I have done anything wrong. I cannot repay your continuous love for me, even throughout the lifetimes of the demigods in the heavenly planets. It is impossible to repay you or show enough gratitude for your love. Therefore, please be satisfied by your own pious activities. You have displayed exemplary attraction for me, overcoming the greatest difficulties arising from family connections. Please be satisfied with your highly exemplary character, for it is not possible for me to repay my debt to you. The exemplary character of devotional service manifested by the devotees of Vrindavan is the purest type of devotion. It is enjoined in authoritative shastras that devotional service must be ahaituki and pratiyata. This means that devotional service to Krishna cannot be checked by political or religious convention. The stage of devotional service is always transcendental. The gopis particularly showed pure devotional service toward Krishna, so much so that Krishna himself remained indebted to them. Lord Chaitanya thus said that the devotional service manifested by the gopis in Vrindavan excelled all other methods of approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta Purport of the 32nd chapter of Krishna. Krishna returns to the gopis.
So what happens now? Do we keep reading or?
I'm supposed to go to the Dhamma Dharmastika. The 7:30.
So what should
we do? You can continue if you want. Two of you. I was just calling myself.
Or should we leave it? It's my fault because I came late, otherwise we would have almost made it. We can do it tomorrow.
I like reading Krishna book.
Huh?
I like reading Krishna book.
Yeah. Should we leave till tomorrow?
Okay, we have 10 more pages. And then what else should we read tomorrow?
Then you go back to CC, I guess.
We're almost finished that, too.
We'll do DB.
Okay.
Start volume 2.
Okay.
See how Mother Uttara responded to Parikshit Maharaj's, "So I'm going upstairs. I'm going to read from the Bhagavatam, chapter 33. It was also very interesting here that in the translation, when Prabhupada, the gopis asked the question, he says there are three types of men, but Bhagavatam doesn't talk about men, it talks about people in general.